What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room episode 95. That slap in the background shows you just how effing excited I am that we are here once again. And we are Get Out the Room, a horror pop culture podcast. I am your host, Day. As always, I got my people with me. Scott, what's good?
Not much. 95. How about that?
The March to 100 is real.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Year 100.
And the third voice, the greatest American hero, Tone, what's going on?
Oh, no, man. No, man. I'm on my Jamie Foxx. I'm stepping to the bad side.
Shit.
I'm the greatest American villain right now.
Greatest American villain. So you really going to earn that lady killer, huh? All right. There we go. Get your mustache ready.
Oh, I got it. I got the goatee. I'm on it. I'm evil twin.
Look, everybody in the area of the West Coast where Tone is, watch out so you don't get tied to train tracks, because that motherfucker going to be out here killing motherfuckers. So, you know, just let y'all know. But here we go. You can find Get Out the Room anywhere good podcasts are found. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Wicked Radio Network, Listenopoly. The list goes on and on.
Google.
Yeah, I don't think we're on that yet, because that shit was hard to get up there. But if somebody else wanna figure that shit out, I'm definitely trying to be up there too. We'll be there soon. So check it out. The newest, latest and greatest not so horror movie that just came out was The First Purge. Now, this is the fourth movie in the Purge franchise.
Yeah.
And it is kind of a departure in a lot of different ways from some of the other films. Tone, you want to set this up?
Oh man, you taking a big chance tonight. Okay, I'll set it up.
Yes.
So what happened was, part of the reason
you why you've I'm been the drinking
American
tonight?
Villain. Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We taking it back tonight.
This shit gonna be good. Oh folks, this gonna be good.
Part of the reason why I'm the greatest American villain and not the greatest American hero is because there is another.
Oh, yes.
There is another hero in this joint. Somebody else deserves the crown. So basically, what happens is, you know, once upon a time, Shaft and Dolomite got a child. And this child grows up to be Black McLean. Wow. Now, I don't know why this nigga was dealing drugs. I don't know why he was doing what he was doing.
He's a son of Nino Brown.
Hit. Oh, yes. And when the purge hits, it hits in this nigga city. And he killing everybody. He snapping necks. He looking at niggas and killing them. He doing it all. So what we got is the Black Die Hard. That's what this film is. Black Die Hard.
Holy shit. Holy shit. Okay. So for those who don't understand any of that shit, this is the fourth fucking Purge movie. This is the first Purge. This is the country right after our new founding fathers have been eliminated, have been elected to office, and they came up with this idea that it is, you know, pretty on the nose for our current political climate of let's take our country back. So what they did was try to find a really direct way to target minorities, the poor, and what they deem as undesirables. So their whole idea was, fuck it, let's just kill them. Hence, the Purge. So they targeted one particular neighborhood in Staten Island. And if you're familiar with the Wu-Tang Clan, it is roughly all of the projects that they hail from, like Park Hills or Killer Hills, like all that shit. All of the neighborhoods, all of the projects that Wu is from, that's where all this shit takes place. And it's pretty ridiculous. So they basically, this is the first purge. So keep in mind, you know, we don't have anything to go off of. But they're like, if you stay, we'll give you 5 G's.
Okay, if, now hold on a minute. I'm interjecting already. Okay.
I can't wait. Come on.
Okay.
Come on, my so white I'm, problematic bae. Come on.
Look, I'm actually not going to hate entirely on what Tony was saying. I think that's laying it on a little thick, of course. I was down for the guy
Black McClane,
you know, running up in that building. I'm all for that. Especially that stairwell fight, which I would call reminded me of that Deadpool or not Deadpool, that Daredevil shit. That was a tight scene of him taking.
Oh, you mean like Daredevil, the Netflix series Daredevil?
Yeah. Okay. Like that scene of him with the guns in his hand and the chain on his other hand.
The only difference is he's going
which is the takeoff off of Old Boy.
Every
hallway scene you've ever seen is a takeoff of Old Boy.
True. Correct.
It's true.
And Old Boy still like that's the what we're banking these long fight scenes on because that's top notch.
Yeah, Takeshi
Miike. It was cool.
Yeah,
it was cool. I'm down for it, but I mean. You guys have been calling him Black McCain, and you know that's fine. But man, John McClane is a trained cop who is fighting terrorists. This guy's a drug dealer who runs in the morning after having sex with two women.
He's spec ops. Like
he's spec ops.
He has to be spec ops. How else could you use a bladed weapon that well, son?
Yes, I mean, is he really?
Look, here's the thing: like
for people on Staten Island like that,
look.
Here's the thing.
If you're the kingpin, you got to do something to get there.
Dude, I got combat training. Like, when he snapped that dude's neck, like, that ain't something. First of all, one, it's fucking impossible.
Yeah.
Just so you know,
yeah,
don't go watching this movie and thinking you can do that shit. Yeah. You can't. Yeah, that's why this nigga's like McCain and you're John Travers. There's a whole nother thing. But the way he did this shit, the way he watched his angles, the way he caught these dudes looking, the way he used a mirror to check behind him to see what their position was.
Or when he took the dude's gun after the fucking car accident and one shot at everybody, tap, 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 tap. Like he double tapped three motherfuckers, pow, 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 and they went down. If this motherfucker is not ghetto ops, what is? Like the next Call of Duty better be ghetto ops.
Ghetto ops. That's what I'm talking about. Ghetto ops.
Oh, now,
this dude's fucking amazing. He's half man, half amazing. The nigga might be all amazing.
He's all amazing. There you go. Like, he's 100% amazing. He's 100%
there
amazing.
There you go.
By the way,
his name is Alain Noel. And if you don't know, he is he's actually the problematic bae from Insecure. And the
indeed.
Dude.
And in fact, we already talked about this. Look, folks, this is the year 100. I got some apologies to make later on, and I'm going to do that. But the first one I'm going to do is I'm going to apologize for calling this nigga Simeon.
Yep.
Because he was looking a little Simeon. I got to be honest. But this shit right here.
You're still wildin'. Right, you know, I cannot believe
you.
Wow. Oh, I'm wildin', son.
You've been on a brown all night?
Oh, yeah.
You said shit like I should have known. Yeah. He's been on the brown all night tonight, folks. Buckle up, bitches. So, Alain Noel, this motherfucker's ghetto ops, and he killing everybody. But the greatest thing is, like, this mixture of Nino Brown, when he's coaching in the community center, but he allowing his ex-girl to slap him in front of everybody and nobody say nothing. I'm like, what the fuck is happening out here? This shit is like, so straight up and down, this shit is a mixture of New Jack City and what could possibly be the beginnings of a zombie apocalypse. Like, that's what we're caught in. This night is literally the mixture in between those two things, and it is fantastic.
Wow. Oh, yeah. There is a whole genre of films that star what we, you know, lovingly call impossible white man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Got a Bruce Willis's whole fortune is based on these joints.
Yeah, yeah. Impossible White Man movies are fantastic.
Oh yeah,
fucking Sylvester Stallone, all the Rambo films, yeah, all that shit. Predator, right? Yes, all these Impossible White Man movies. Yes.
And up until this moment, we've had Magical Negroes and Impossible White Men. This is the first. This is the birth. This is the birth of a nation right here. This is the birth of
the impossible black man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is the birth of the impossible black man.
Wow. I love all of this, by the way. This is fantastic.
This nigga got gut shot fucking 3 hours ago. And still walking out the goddamn he's still walking out the projects.
Look, no, the worst part about the walking out of projects piece is these motherfuckers made a goddamn Soul Train line and gave him a standing ovation as he walked out. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh.
This motherfucker said, "The Godfather of the Hood." Are you kidding?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who,
oh, yeah.
By the way.
Wait, hold on. Wait. Are you guys trolling me? Like you were down for that scene? Like, come on. That was
really? That shit was terrible. But within the framework, go ahead. Yeah, within the framework of the impossible black man, there's nothing better. Like, you got to change your focus, man. The movie itself, like, after you take the geopolitical shit,
I haven't had a chance to bitch though. Like, I what you guys are talking about, I'm not complaining about that. I was down for that guy. I enjoyed. One of the things that the movie's very entertaining, and that guy is the reason he's so damn entertaining.
Alain Noel is fucking fantastic. Like the five and a half minutes that this motherfucker had his treadmill up to 11 and just kept running through the whole goddamn scene.
Well, I was mad as fuck. But that was the first time we see him. He's running on the treadmill, and like one of those girls brings him his fucking breakfast smoothie, and then she goes back to the bed, and there's another girl just laying there in the bed too. And I'm like, wow, they're really setting this guy up big time.
He's Nino Brown, okay, baby.
Well, all right. Well, wait a minute though. I just want to state for the record, that's not the most unrealistically thing. No.
It was, but that doesn't make it not funny.
That could happen. And that has happened.
Absolutely.
Hold the fuck up. Hold on. Stop right now. This motherfucker Tone is up here trying to let y'all motherfuckers know that he had two chicks and that he had a lady bring him his breakfast protein smoothie while he was running on the treadmill at 5.2. Alon was at 11. Tone was at 5.2. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. I mean, it was eggs. But, you know,
his eggs. They brought me a plate with a fork and knife.
Look, I had the exact same shit, but y'all not going to have me out here telling on myself. So we just going to leave this shit right here. But this motherfucker on the penthouse in the hood, number one. Number two, he had the 1,000-inch fucking TV or some new shit.
I love this entire, like, you're right. He's impossibly black.
Yes. Yes.
Of course his TV is 1,000 inches. Of course it is.
Of course it is. How did they even get that motherfucker up the stairs in the hood? That shit didn't fit in the elevator.
It's just Jesus. Okay. That's fantastic.
We gotta say this. We say this sometimes, and I'm saying it right now. We do this so that y'all don't have to.
No, y'all, everybody got to see this shit.
God's official. But, you regular white folks, don't walk around calling people impossible black. Don't do that. You'll get your feelings hurt.
Especially in today's climate, that shit could be taken wrong, and you're going to be on some Now News shit. In the grocery store, motherfuckers hit you over the head with a melon, like... Yeah, you might want to pause off that shit.
Oh man, stop it!
Mm-hmm. Yo, but can we just, you know, we need to toot our own horn? Because look, we did this shit.
We called this shit like, from this, the very first person.
This is a fucking celebration of us. We did this shit. We told them cats. Yo,
I may have to go pick up that old fucking like. I need to repost the original Purge conversation because these motherfuckers literally did everything we said for them to do.
They took the playbook. just like Grimm did. Yep. You know, just like
we fixed Grimm. I don't give a shit. I think we should have gotten executive producer or at least co-producer edits and credits. Motherfucker, we should get. Does that get us the sidecar? What does that get us?
If we get
credits,
this is fantastic.
Fuck. Yeah, we need something. That.
And we told them exactly what to do with the purge. We told them exactly what to do. In fact, shout out to Monkey Ryan, because Ryan was a main one of like, they should do this, they should do that.
Ryan was an early adopter of what they should do to fix this shit. And these motherfuckers listen. And guess what? Here we are. Now we have the impossible black man who is like one step away from having his name on a community center that's right next to the goddamn church. That's how fucking Nino Brown this dude is. He almost has his name on a community center. Nino Brown Community Center. How good is this? This motherfucker don't. He's such a good drug dealer, he doesn't even let drugs in the community center. Come on, cuz.
I want them to have a mural of this dude on the building in the second purge.
That's gonna happen.
I mean, he's a hood martyr because clearly he has to die from that gunshot. But I'm just saying.
No, he has to.
Like, okay,
he's
so,
not gonna die.
But so what's he gonna do? He gonna take the girl and he gonna like. Get the light-skinned track star boy and send him to fucking Purdue and move to West Lafayette and just retire from drugs now? Motherfucker, you lived through the first purge. You the hero of all of Staten Island, and now you're going to move to West Lafayette, Indiana, and just go to Purdue University? Fuck it. Let me get my master's. Now it's him and Drew Brees on the Instagram hugging each other and shit. Get the fuck out of here. These motherfuckers on the Boilermaker train riding around campus talking about we out here. Motherfucker, you from Staten Island. You from Killer Hills. These motherfuckers in the Park Hill goddamn projects. And now all of a sudden, you done moved the light-skinned track dude who too scared to pull the trigger on a motherfucker that told him he was going to cut him. And now all of a sudden, you and West Lafayette, get the fuck out of here.
No, but what you're doing right now, this is what you're doing. What you're doing right now, you underestimating the first impossible black man. He ain't going nowhere. He's staying in the hood. And when the purge comes next year, he gonna be there to save these motherfuckers.
Look, here's what's really popping. This motherfucker's so impossible, they just take Killer Hills off their map.
I'm putting this nigga on Freddy's level. He's coming back every time.
Nope. Look, here we go into a new level. If this is the birth for the impossible black man, they're not even going to Park Hill no more. Killer Hills, they like, you know what? We tried that. It didn't work. One dude took out 50 SS motherfuckers. These motherfuckers had the Luftwaffe on his goddamn uniform and got killed by the impossible black man in what is probably the 50 Cent fucking wife beater. So guess what? We not going there next year. Let's move to LA. These motherfuckers had to go across the entire country to find a new home for the purge killings because Staten Island was too rugged. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, man. Hey, by the way, I like this movie now more after this talk.
You should. You should have seen it this way from the beginning.
I don't understand how you didn't see it this way from the beginning. It's not with that dude. That's not my issue.
Alain Noel he's great. This like on some real shit. If they ever need to find a new black Wesley Snipes who's paying his taxes and shit, Alain Noel is him. Like the motherfucker look good with no shirt on. He clearly can do all the stunts. He's hood ops. He's the birth of hood ops. Like, I've never seen a motherfucker take a RPG inside of a hood apartment. Check it out. So for anybody that knows hood apartments, all the fucking walls are made of stone. So with a fucking RPG, it's just not going to happen. The Luftwaffe and the SS came into the Park Hills apartment building. They shot off a jillion rounds and hit one motherfucker and then was like, you know what, fuck it, let's just bring out an RPG. Get the fuck out of here.
No part of this film is realistic.
None. Not one.
All right. Wait, hold up. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about Skeletor.
Skeletor is the only horror aspect of the entire fucking movie, and I wish they had used him more.
Absolutely. I like when he took those dudes out at the end of the hall. I was kind of hoping for a minute I wouldn't have even minded him kind of saving them to a degree and them all kind of getting out, kind of having an understanding. Yeah, but I mean, like working together to get out.
He gave the impossible Negro the only window he needed to survive. We only need a window. We don't need much, motherfucker. You give the impossible Negro an inch, that's like giving him a mile. Motherfucker, that's it. That's all we need.
Touche.
I was hoping that, you know, he was going to take them out. It was going to come together. Mm-mm. And fire. Yeah.
I wanted that. That's what I was saying. That's what I wanted.
He made too many proclamations.
Funny. The film actually came to reality in this.
But Skeletor made too many proclamations about motherfuckers he was going to kill, so he can't stay.
No. You're right.
Motherfucker in the middle of the streets talking about, hey, I'm going to come out here, I'm going to get all your drugs, but then I need to bloodlet. This motherfucker is talking to himself about how he going to bloodlet. And everybody's like, yo, this motherfucker crazy. This motherfucker went into broad daylight to the only crew on Staten Island who sells drugs, and he going to cut one of the fresh, light-skinned dealers across the neck with a blade? This motherfucker gave him $1.50.
Yeah, but the guy that tried to shoot him, though, was, like, the worst shot ever. He's worse than
I don't give a shit about that. That's movie magic. But the real shit that none of y'all realize...
Motherfuckers can't shoot.
Shooting is very difficult. That shit, that's more of the hood op shit. But this motherfucker did some above the rim shit, and he pulled a motherfucking blade out of his goddamn gums and gave him $1.50 on sight. Y'all don't understand how real that is. This is motherfucking Park Hill shit. But all of a sudden, now we in a low rises like we in Baltimore. What the fuck is happening? How many black people was co-executive producing this shit?
What happened there?
I'm really happy about this. I love this movie. But Scott, I know you wanted to bring some levity to this conversation and get us off of this. But we're just going to keep coming back to the impossible black man shit. So I need you to figure out how all of the shit that you said earlier, I need you to bring it up. Because I got all these ideas and all these different things I'm going to tell you that you're wrong for.
I understand. So let's go to my experience with this movie.
The white experience.
It's not true. Where we're going to go.
No, that's not true at all. Because at this point,
No.
I have been drinking clear.
No.
I haven't eaten in like 6 hours.
The point I'm going to hit on is the point is one of the big cruxes of the movie here. And you brought up earlier that they were offering people $5,000 if they stayed on the island. Now you have to remember, the way we learned that was the people who were going in and being interviewed were being offered $5,000 to stay on the island. Okay.
Right.
Not everyone was being offered the money to stay. So my question is, why were people staying on the island if there were going to be people out killing everyone?
It didn't make sense to me. Okay.
Why?
I got you. Let me handle this. Let me handle this light work, Damon. I got this one. Okay. First of all, they did offer everybody $5,000 to stay on the island. Not everybody took it, but they offered everybody $5,000 to stay on the island. And then they offered some people more if they quote unquote participated.
Yeah.
And also, you got to understand the purge. Did you recognize what day of the week it was when they did the purge? Because I peeped. It was a weekday.
It was Wednesday, right? Wasn't it just like middle of the week?
Yeah.
So motherfuckers had to go to work the next day. And exactly. Like what I was talking to Scott about earlier.
They don't all have jobs. Yeah, they all have cars.
And they chose. Gotta be at work. Yeah, and they chose like a really working class, really like working class blue collar town. And the other thing is, how many motherfuckers go listen to what the government is saying? So shit, this incredibly radical. It's like, guess what? We gonna make murder.
But there were lines of people waiting to get all this shit from the government. Contact lenses and the. I mean, like it was gonna happen.
Yeah, but nobody believes they weren't giving out guns.
Right.
Nobody believes that they just go out and kill people. And even the beginning of the fucking movie, when Marissa Tomei and a homie was like, look, nobody's killing anyone. They're enjoying the freedom. No one's killing anyone.
Yo, and can we just for a second, can we talk about, I don't know who the fuck they had writing this shit. This is a black ass fucking film.
Yeah.
Like there's a revolutionary theory where they go, you know, a lot of what racism is, a lot of what the fear of black folks is that, you know, you assume that given the same, like if we ever get to the same amount of power, the same amount of people, that we will do to them what they did to us.
Yeah.
And there's a long line of black thought that says, no, we're not that. It's not going to happen. And why in this movie, when these people had the chance to act a fucking fool, what was they doing? They was at the block party. They were dancing. They was drinking. They was smoking. They was having fun. Yep. Like this, like the subliminals in this fucking movie, yo. Like this shit is blacker than James Baldwin. Like this is some real shit.
Shit is so real. Look, and I was in my little bit of a rant, but I meant that very real. I don't think this was by accident that they named all of the hoods and projects that the Wu-Tang is from. So you recognize that these are, you know, lower class. These are real hoods in Staten Island, right? People talk about Park Hills. They call that shit Killer Hills for a reason. And this was all part of it. You know, Scott and I got into this shit earlier where he was just saying that it felt like it was too focused on lower class and it was too focused on, you know, like black and Latino. I'm like, but that's what this whole shit was for. The idea behind the purge was to get rid of all the poor people and all of the minorities. From even the first, second, and third movies, all of the statistics that they talk about are homelessness is down to non-existence, joblessness down to non-existence, crime down to like 0.1%. This is literally all the things that white people attribute to minorities. And that's all because we've had the purge, so we systematically take out all the minorities, dog. Mm-hmm. This shit is right on the nose. There's no way about it. Like, I know for a fact that they chose this view for this film because it starts with super hard-edged right-wing conservative Dutch who've now been elected to quote-unquote save and restore our country with a radical idea of the purge. And what is the first thing they're going to do? You've now given us the keys to your Ferrari. We're going to drive this motherfucker as fast as we can, and we're killing all the brown folks. That's the idea.
And can we talk about the double meaning of the purge? Because on one side, it's, you know, it's people, individual people are purging their negative whatever. But on the other side, it's the nation itself is purging itself
of all the minorities
of what it needs to be. Exactly. Yeah. Like they got this shit just right. And again, they listen to us. We fix their shit. And look at this shit. It's fucking. This is the most original film series I've seen, probably ever.
I mean, the idea in and of itself is not particularly mind blowing or groundbreaking. The idea that you get
no. See, I'd actually disagree. I find the idea of the Purge and the Purge franchise as a whole to be one of the better ideas I've heard for a franchise.
No, not the franchise. The idea of the purge.
Okay.
The idea of 12 hours of everything being legal. But realistically, if you had 12 hours to commit any crime, wouldn't you just be doing white collar crimes and getting rich?
Yes.
Put yourself in a bunker, get the highest level security IP you can, and you should be insider trading literally for 12 hours.
Correct. And there's like another, that's kind of why. So there, you guys stuck around for the end and saw the trailer for the TV show.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what, now are they going to go into shit like that? Probably not. I mean, it's just going to be more of the same. I'm assuming
it's not fun, but it's realistic. That's what I would do. That's the way you take yourself out of middle class with a bunch of
one guy with the crowbar. That one guy with a crowbar going up to the ATM was just like a nice little break of something than just murder. It was just like, I'm going to get this money. You're taking my money. I'm going to go get this money
but
now.
But the dude with the crowbar like, is realistic. That's correct. The first thing you're going to think. It's not murder. Yeah. No, if all crime is legal, you're breaking into every single bank. You're taking as much money as you can, and nobody can say shit about it. That's what you do.
Right.
They had to put in some motherfucking...
Well, and that's why the officials released all these crazy people.
No. Racists.
That's why they released all these crazy people
racists.
In the streets.
Racists. All right. I found the stats from how the new founding farmers sold the purge to people. Murder. Since the purge, murder is down 12%. Assaults down 9.2%. Auto theft down 45%. Burglary down 7.3%. Kidnapping down 16%. And arson down 21.9%. All right? Now imagine if somebody quoted those fucking stats to you. Like, let's not even go too far. If Donald Trump and his fucking cronies, backed by Putin, just said, yo, this is what's happening if you allow us to keep doing what we're doing. How many motherfuckers in the middle of the country, uneducated and don't understand what's happening, would be like, you know what, fuck it, let's kill them all anyway.
I don't disagree.
I don't disagree either, and that makes me so sad.
I hate to bring a whole bunch of levity to this shit, but
you're okay. So I'll tell you what I'm trying to think about how I want to say this.
Oh, Scott, stop it! You didn't already call this nigga impossibly black. Like, come on, we fam. Just
I understand. So
he trying to make sure the white folks don't come for him.
No. Well, yeah. Well, that too. Yes. No. And it, so whoops. It was very, the movie was very, I told Damon this, it's very heavy-handed in the white versus black.
Yes, but they're all heavy-handed that way, though.
Yeah, but this one was particularly so.
Because it started small. The idea was, we are the targets.
Yes, and that's fine. Now I'm gonna comment back to I would rather see what we saw in the first Purge, obviously, than the first movie, because the first movie to me was the dumbest place to start with this really great idea.
Yeah.
Why would you start with a rich white family when you're focusing on when it's a night where you really want to be out in the streets? You really want to go see how people are surviving. You want to go see how people are really surviving a night like this, do you really want to watch people protect their house? That's why that movie didn't really work for me, and it's not a good movie, and it's not a good movie to go back to. I mean, they got top-notch, well, you know what I mean, they got good actors to be in the movie, but yeah. It didn't fucking work.
Yeah, now the second it's a movie, weird film, particularly because the idea behind the Purge, even when they start talking about the statistics, the demographic that we're watching experience the Purge have almost nothing to do with the intent behind.
Exactly. And it's hard to, because when I, you know, when people ask me, whenever somebody asks me about, you know, good horror-ish movies that I've seen recently, I always suggest watching The Purge Anarchy.
Yeah.
And they go, is that the first one? And I go, it's not, but you don't have to see the first one. And I would not recommend to watch the first one because it's not a good movie.
Right.
The Purge Anarchy takes the idea to where you want to see it. It shows different perspectives on how different people would handle the night, both black and white, both in the government and not in the government, both people who want to use the purge to help their family and to help themselves, and for people who would struggle during the purge, for people who won't struggle during the purge. It shows you, and it shows people making dumb fucking decisions. I mean, that couple in the Purge Anarchy, that white couple who makes a comment, you know, they're out there and they go, wow, you know, we've got an hour till the purge. I'm like, what? Why are you still out in the streets?
Yeah,
you
like, stupid bastards. Yeah, like y'all should have been, at the house 6 hours ago.
Right. Like you waited till now to go to the grocery and you're shocked your car broke down.
Yeah. Like, I mean, y'all should have had the binge fucking list from Netflix set up 2 weeks ago.
Exactly. Right. And it's, it shows it. They run the gamut of everyone. And, you know, like Frank Grillo's character is, he probably wouldn't be out there purging, but he had a reason to be out there purging. That's cool. Then you had a Carmen Ejogo and her daughter. They were just, they found themselves struggling because of the situation they were in. It showed you, and it was even their father. He was trying to do better by them. So he sold himself to be killed by a rich white family.
Yeah, but these are all personal stories. The thing about the first purge was they wanted to show you the systemic reason why we had this shit in the first place.
Yes. And I think this goes back to what I was originally saying, though. So it was very the very white versus black. I mean, everybody that they were showing in Staten Island was black. Everybody in the government
black
was
or Hispanic.
White.
It was just black or
Latin. Yes, yes, black or Hispanic. Yes.
Yeah, they're all black or Latin.
They were non-white.
Yeah.
And it look, I get it. It came off a little heavy to me, and I didn't feel like it. It look, came off a little too heavy.
Homie, if 53% of white women still voted for Trump, you can't be giving hints. You got to be heavy as handed as fuck.
I'm glad you keep bringing up the Trump thing. That's how it made me. I remember when, I mean, but let's go back, unfortunately, back to 16. After that, you know, Trump was elected. The feeling that a lot of liberal white people felt, i.e. how I felt, was, wow, like it's just like shell shocked. I mean, I talked to you about this, Damon. It was just like complete, you know what I mean? And it was just like, damn, because not all, you know, it's like not all white people voted for Trump. You know what I mean? And
because
I'm one of those people. And I was just like, you know, and
look,
so
Scott, like, I think, look, I'm going to stop you, Scott, because I think you're missing something important here. And so what ended up happening was that it was the government that turned against the black and brown people. And then they sent mercenaries into the hood dressed up like KKK members to like hide the fact of what they was doing. So the comment that this movie is making on society is that we all ain't that different. But sometimes the government will go in and stoke some bullshit between all of us to start some beef to cover up the dumb shit that they doing.
Yep.
It wasn't really white versus black. I found the film fucking like beyond the fucking beyond the impossible black man, and that's hard to do. It's hard to get past the first impossible black man. I saw this movie. I don't text in movies. I don't look at my phone. Damon will tell you. I was talking to this nigga the whole fucking
whole movie.
I was so excited. I had to talk to somebody.
And look, I was excited as fuck because I was like, wait a minute. Tone don't tell me shit until like 3 days later. Oh, I saw the movie. This motherfucker was in the film like, this shit's the greatest. I can't wait for you to see this.
Dude, it was insane. Like, beyond the impossible black man, like the ideas of the film are mad fucking erudite. Like this was some next level shit, man. It was some next level shit. It was just, the beauty of it is this, like, you know, look, philosophically, what they doing is next level. The execution, though, is bread and circuses.
Correct.
Like, this is just popcorn fare.
Yeah.
You put those two things together, and like I said, you got Shaft and Dolomite. Like, it's dope. It's dope.
You got the bastard child of Nino Brown, who's running all of Staten Island, mixed with the geopolitical ideas that our government is causing more differences than we actually have. Like,
exactly.
The fact that they targeted a church, and if said they were somebody inside the church who started it.
Exactly.
Like, there was a lot of little things, like throwaway lines. And a super loud black woman from the hood who's from the projects, she was probably my favorite character. I don't even know her name. I just know she was loud, and she was hood, and I loved it. But there's a lot to this film.
That might as well have been my auntie.
Right, right. There was a whole lot of really on-the-nose aspects of this film that come from a place of understanding and knowing. I think a lot of people feel like, oh, well, like, why would you do that? Like, why would somebody say that? Because there are motherfuckers who actually live like this. There are people who feel this way, who think this way. Like, Skeletor is probably just a character to a lot of people, right? Realistically, there are probably crackheads right now that you're like, oh, yeah, there you go. That's just like, I know that dude.
Oh, no. Skeletor is a real dude. Skeletor is a real dude.
It's just, there's so much of this shit that's real. And, you know, not to, like, move this shit away from this, but I think that the idea was there are nefarious white people at work in the government, and they will do anything, not even within their power, not even within the law. They will do anything to get to their end goal, and that's the eradication of those that they feel like are not necessary for our society.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. But yo, we're going to have to wrap this up at some point because, yeah. One, we're breaking mad rules. Like, this is a film that we like, and you know we try hard not to spoil shit that we like. We didn't spoil shit out of this.
Yeah, we didn't kill this one.
We still got, and when we still got other shit to talk about.
Yeah, we didn't kill this one. So, real quick, slashes.
Scott, did you make all your points, Scott? Because I don't want to cut you off. You know what I'm saying?
Well, look, I'll say this. I appreciate talking a film like this out because it makes, I don't know, it makes me look at it again. I'm interested to see it again, and I actually appreciate it more having talked about it. I mean, I enjoy the hell out of listening to you guys talk about this. I mean, I'm like speaking as like a fan while on here, seriously, and it's I appreciate it. I love this franchise as a whole because I really think that they could. I'm down for them milking this for as many movies as they want to make. A TV show, fine, whatever. I mean, I don't know about it being on USA, but
yeah, it's fun. It's entertaining.
This is my Friday the 13th.
Yes. Like, yeah,
they can make 900.
Right there. Yep. That's exactly.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, especially because they've taken the horror out of it at this point. Like the boogeyman is no longer a person. The boogeyman is a government.
They don't have to. I mean, they could. That's what kind of made it. You know, I the best scene in the movie is that scene of it's twofold. It's when Skeletor's mining the crowd of that party.
Yeah,
and it's very tense. But at the same time, the dealer sitting in there with those two women who you know are there for a reason. Like they, you know, it's very obvious that they're there to kill him. And it's really because they go back and forth and you're kind of focusing on when is this going to turn badly for him while he's sitting there when they're on the pool table. Likewise, you're looking at the partygoers who are just enjoying, living life when this psychopath walks in, and it's very, very tense because you know shit's going to hit the fan. And that's right there. That is some really great horror. I mean, hell, they opened the damn movie on the face of that Skeletor dude. Yep. And it was just like right in your face. And you're like, holy shit. And it's just, I mean, they set it right there. And I like the horror aspect of it. I think they should hit that a little harder. But like, stepping back from that,
right,
it doesn't need the horror because now they can take it. I like the idea of making it more realistic. I mean, what happens when people go, why would we just go kill? Why don't we go do this or that? Or, because it is. It's just like just everybody's just going to go kill everybody. I mean, I even think about even in Purge Anarchy when they show the clips of all these people preparing to go out and purge. They're dressing up in these weird masks and have all their weapons and shit. And it's like, I mean, damn, I don't think everybody's going to treat it like Halloween and then go out and murder their neighbors. I mean, it's not like that. So it's created a conversation like what we just had. And that's what I appreciate about it as well.
That's what the Purge is meant to do though. At its base, that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to create conversation. It's supposed to sit you down and look at our current fucking political climate and say, what about this shit is real? What about this is far-fetched? And what if we don't start to pay attention could be our very near future? So, like, right. Some of these, like, these episodes on USA, they could be like Freddy's Nightmares, right? It could just be a dude who is setting his family up so that they can get in a private school. He's hacking everything, giving them all the money, clearing all their debt, and then at the end of it, he gets killed by somebody blowing up his house. But
it could be a couple going through a divorce, and Purge Night pops up. And all of a sudden, somebody has an idea. It'd be easier if this motherfucker was just dead.
Yep.
Now we in a locked room movie. Like, there are so many. You know, yeah, I know y'all listening. Y'all need to take that one. That's legit. Like, y'all need to take that one. A woman's cheating on her husband. She want to get a divorce. She can't do it. He's making the money. Purge night comes up. She sets his ass up. He thinks he's safe because he's locked himself in his house. He don't realize the threat's coming from inside the house. Y'all can have that one. Take it.
Y'all done already took all the rest of them, so it ain't nothing there.
But what I love about Purge, and I get where you're coming from in regards to, like, it's not a horror film anymore. In regards to, like, the, I don't know, maybe the execution, I guess, yeah, you could say. But, like, just the idea of the Purge, the society that says that that's okay, the world that you live in when that's something that happens, like, this shit is fucking terrifying. It's just a different level. It's not viscerally scary. It's emotionally and mentally scary. You know what I'm saying?
It's real.
Yes.
It's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, having said all that, Scott, how many
slashes? Are you going to start with me? No, you don't start with me. You start with Tony.
Well, I know what Tone's going to get this shit. Tone, how many slashes?
You already know.
Tone, slashes.
Yeah, this is the final tap.
10.
This is 11 out of 10. 11 out of 10. Spinal tap.
Birth of the Impossible Black Man. I'm going 25. Scott, you up, motherfucker.
Damn it. See, all right, man, by me going last now, I'm the best. No,
I tried to give you a motherfucking out. You weren't trying to take it.
I like to think back on what I gave these previous movies, so... I don't remember what I gave the original movie. I'm sure I gave it a higher score than it deserved, which is, that's a bad score. So
it hasn't aged well.
No, it's aged really poor. It's just it's just a shitty movie, and it's not a shitty movie.
You guys are being too hard on it. It's a good movie. The first Purge was good. It's just that all the other Purges have been so much fucking better.
Yep.
It's suffering in comparison. But it's a good flick. We enjoyed the Purge. We talked about it, and I stand by that. We enjoyed the Purge.
Yep.
The next Purges are just better. That's all
they are better. Yep.
I would go, maybe go 6.5.
Okay.
All right. Scott.
Dude, 6.5 is not bad. Keep in mind, my 5 is average. I'm going in that 5 is a middle score. That's like a, you know, movie's okay.
But a 6.5 is not necessarily enjoyable. And I found this shit to be enjoyable.
Well, no. See, I disagree. 6.5 is enjoyable to me. 6.5 is a movie that I'm going to give another shot to, especially based on this hard discussion here. But I'm also trying to be fair here. I enjoyed the Purge Anarchy to be like, I mean, that's like 8, 8.5. Okay. Purge Election Year is not that good, but I would go 7, and I enjoyed that a little more than the first Purge. So that's my thinking with that.
Okay.
All right. I gotta do this, and I don't ever do this, but I gotta talk you up.
Oh, so okay. here's holy fuck.
Here's the deal.
Y'all usually be the one trying to talk me up. I love it.
Here's the deal. Remember the rubric that we've already set. If you think you're gonna like it, you will like it. That's a 7, 7.5. If the movie's just like not good, we talking 5 to 6. Like maybe you like it, maybe you don't. Whatever. If the movie's outstanding, anybody that sees this joint is gonna like it. That's 8, 9 or above. Now, do you feel that this movie falls beneath the idea of, if you went here to see this, you gonna enjoy it?
Okay. How about this? I'll give you a 7. How's that?
That's my dude.
I'll take it. I will take it.
Okay. All right.
Look. I told Damon this when we first talked about it. I didn't hate it at all, and I was entertained during the movie. But I also was frustrated at points because it just stirred up feelings of kind of where I was going earlier. Having talked through it, it makes me, I honestly, movies like this I appreciate more. If you can get this much conversation from a movie called The First Purge, this is the fourth Purge movie.
Yep.
And we just had a talk that involved politics, our political system now. And that, I don't know, that to me is pretty fucking impressive. So, I mean, and we talked about, you know, the main character being a superhero in the same movie. I mean, like, that's the kind of movies we talk horror. That's the kind of movie that we talk up. So,
and this is the kind of shit that we're
not upset about changing the score.
This is the kind of shit we grew up watching. This is an 80s fucking action flick.
It is.
We're grown ass men. Like, I haven't seen a film like this in God knows how fucking long, man.
Yep.
Yeah. Little 12-year-old Tony was doing fucking backflips in the theater. Like, it was dope, man.
Yeah, shit was very cool. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. When motherfuckers got his truck blown over and turned into ghetto ops and didn't give a fuck and never turned back, my only real disappointment is having the entire goddamn team wiped out by some flying drones.
Oh, yeah.
That's my only real disappointment.
Well, and that creates they had that missed opportunity. When I was watching that, I told Damon this earlier today. You know, I was kind of hoping that they were setting that little, because the group there, I was hoping they were setting them up to kind of lead to that group that Michael K. Williams was a part of.
That's what I was thinking. They could have been the man.
That would have been so cool. Yeah. I mean, that was a missed opportunity.
But you know what? I will happily sacrifice the Black Magnificent Seven to get the Black John McClane. Like, that was a trade-off. I will take every time to the bank.
Yeah, Black McClane was really fucking good.
Dude, amazing. Amazing.
Yep. Yep. Look, right, we got some other
shit to talk about. Come on, y'all.
Yeah, we do. There's more blackness in store, motherfuckers. So I don't know if you got your Jolt Cola and some this Dr. Thunder. If you got some Dr. Thunder, motherfucker, buckle up. Because here we go. We're going to roll right on in the Luke Cage, which turned out to be another piece where Scott did not like the ending.
No. Oh, that's a lie, man. No, I came around on that. We talked about that.
But I had to show you the fucking comic book to get you there.
No. Well, now hold on a minute. Let's be fair, too.
You had to show me the comic book, too, though.
Yeah.
Hold on a minute. One of my favorite comic book characters is Luke Cage. I love the character. So that when the ending is, from what everything I have read, is out of character. So that was where I was coming from.
I get it.
So
it's one of the reasons to this day I hate the I hate the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Although people like it, I hate it because that ain't my fucking. Well, actually, okay. He was a good Spider-Man.
He was a terrible Peter Parker. He's nobody's Peter.
That's
Parker.
Not my fucking.
Peter He's Parker. Definitely Spider-Man though. Go ahead, keep going. Don't stop.
All I wanted to say was that that's where I was coming from. My knee-jerk reaction was, now wait a minute, that seems a little out of character. Now, when you actually step back from it though, what that ending creates is, man, I'll be honest, if they could take that ending into, they're going to take it into season 3, but they can take that ending into a season 2 of Defenders and really step that show up to levels that would blow damn near everything else on Netflix out. If they really go, and they won't, but if they really treat the ending like they could, they could really do some things.
So,
that, I mean,
I feel like we shouldn't spoil this ending and talk around this shit, because if we do, it changes.
Damon.
Look, I know. But
nigga, but I look. Got my black hat. I'm off the ground.
Look,
I don't know. Don't be trying to keep you from spoiling this shit.
13 episodes, man. Obviously, 4 too long. But the back 3.5 episodes of this 13 are some of the best half episodes of any fucking series. And I don't give a shit what nobody says. Jessica Jones season 2 is boring. I'm watching it like, no, get the fuck out of here.
Look, I will say, I don't think it was boring, but it's not as good as Luke Cage's.
No, no, it's not good. No, it's not.
No, well, conversely, like the first episode, the first season of Luke Cage was all right, but wasn't great. Like,
well, I don't think Mike Coulter really had a character. I feel like Mike Coulter is a better Luke Cage in the season than he was in the first one.
Oh, but, absolutely. I agree. Everything about this season was better. Everything.
Yeah, but it also helps that Mahershala Ali is not in there chewing up every goddamn scene.
Kill it, I know. Sucking all the oxygen out the room. The dude, yeah, that dude's fucking magnetic. Like,
he killed every scene. This season you got Alfrey Woodard, who's doing a fucking incredible job. She had 20 different wigs, but every goddamn scene she's killing in Luke Cage.
I don't know, man. Me and Scott talked about this. Like, Alfred would have made me mad uncomfortable, dude. Mad uncomfortable.
That's bullshit.
I felt like I had to call out Stranger Danger a couple times on that joint. She made me uncomfortable, son.
Yeah, she's supposed to. I like her. I'm with it.
All right, well, look, man. Okay. All our get out the rumors. I need get out the rumors. That's good. I like that. Okay, rumors. Mm-hmm. All right, rumors. I need to let y'all know this. This is how much I respect Day, because y'all know me. Y'all know I would have spoiled the shit out of this. I told you I'd give you all the tea. I'd spill it all up over you. Pants would have been wet. I'd have fucked it up. I'm not gonna do it.
Look,
but what I am gonna do, I'm gonna take one more sip of this brown. I'm gonna put my white folks voice on, and I'm gonna analyze this shit for y'all. All right. Go.
Yes.
Let me grab my brown.
Y'all didn't see it, I just did my ball dance from Pose, and I just started doing my somebody do a death drop. Y'all not ready for that shit though.
Oh, all right, rumors. So here we go. So, one, this season is an exploration of the internecine conflicts of the black community. It's expat, it's regular black American, light skin, dark skin, money, no money. The very old school, because Luke Cage is a very old school, 1960s type of character, So the very old school against the very new school. It is a very in-depth exploration of the black community. And on top of that, it's got a pretty dangerous and impressive villain, and it eschews very well. Y'all hear that? Y'all see that eschews? I told y'all I was gonna put my white folks on. So okay, go back. All right. So it eschews very well to the classic comic book archetype, where you have two villains. You have a foot soldier, and then you have an overarching villain, the mastermind, and it eschews very well with that. And on top of that, you have conflicted villains, anti-heroes in this joint. It's there's a lot going on in here. Y'all need to watch this. And all that, after all that, I'm gonna tell you this. I'm gonna put my regular voice back on so y'all know I'm fucking serious. Yo, that last two fucking episodes, dope. Y'all need to watch this shit.
Yes. I wholeheartedly agree.
Go ahead, Scott. Get into it.
Well, so one of the things I really liked about it was, especially about the end. So the beginning, my first comment on the early part of the season was, Mike Coulter is fantastic as Luke Cage. And he was fantastic throughout the season. But as the season went on, they started to focus quite a bit more on the supporting characters. And I appreciated that. We got to know a lot about Misty. We got to know a lot about Bushmaster. We got to know a lot about Mariah. And we got to know more about Shades.
Stokes.
And I speak Shades. So let me speak Stokes. On Shades a little bit.
Stokes.
Stokes.
Dillard.
Stokes.
You get to know a little bit more about Shades. Side note, I am not a Thea Rossi fan at all. I can't help but see his character from Sons of Anarchy when I watch him on screen, and I hated his character on that show. And that's unfair to the character, because I actually, by the end of the season, I was, you know, I didn't have any hatred towards Shades, but early on, I just found him to be kind of bitch made until that scene with Comanche in the barbershop when the two of them were really having a real conversation. And that was fantastic.
Hey, look, man, you know, Tone and I talked to you about this before. Shades rang real true with us, man. Like, this motherfucker, there's a couple different dynamics to the character Shades that Theo Rossi conveyed incredibly well. One, he was never supposed to be the man. He was always the man next to the man. He was
always going to be a number two.
Right. He was always supposed to be the man next to the man. He managed to make it all the way up there. Yeah, exactly. But he managed to get there. But he's never secure in his space being there.
Right.
He was never okay. He never felt like the ground was beneath his feet. He always felt like he was constantly fighting to keep it. Right? So the first thing he did, he had to get his people. He had to get Chi. He had to get Comanche there with him because he felt like Comanche was like the only real dude in his life who had his whole back. So his whole character arc through the entire season rang super true to me. And like, I know Theo Rossi caught a lot of heat. I fuck with that dude. I like what he did at Shades. He good with me. Go ahead, Scott.
No,
I can't take away the, you know, like I said, I was judging him based on when I had first seen the actor, and I didn't care for his character on that show when I first watched it. And Sons is just, it's not a great show anyway. I mean, by the end of the show, it's just not good. He's just not a great character. So then that's unfair.
There are good characters other than Gemba. Like who's like Katie Seagal is the best character on the show by the end of it. That's it.
I don't want to talk too much on Sons. That shit, like, we don't need to spend any time talking about that. I was unfairly judging it. I'm admitting that I'm unfairly judging him.
Oh, I'm so proud of you, man. I was about to tell you to stop beating yourself up because I've been shitting on Evangeline Lilly for like 9 years, nigga.
How?
This is your loss.
It is his loss. Yeah. Sons of Anarchy is his loss. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, you cut yourself a break. It's all right.
Wait, no, Sons is my loss? No. The early part of that show is actually really good. And it just, that's one of the most frustrating
shows. That's why he's
so
good. Exactly.
So was Lawless.
Yeah, no seriously. Sons of Anarchy is your loss. Okay.
But your loss.
Talk? No. Lost is worth a discussion because if somebody asked you if Lost is worth watching, what would you tell them? See that's my point. Sons, I would tell him.
I'm not sure.
No, I'm telling everyone to watch Lost. The first opening seasons, the amount of speculation, the amount of information, the amount of intrigue, the way it grips you for the very first 2 hour episode, completely worth the trip. You will be frustrated by the ending.
Yes.
Like somebody might have been jacking you off for 4 hours and you never got to come. That's fine. Right. That's fine. Lost. I'm okay with that. It is worth the hand job technique was so good, completely worth it.
Nah. Lost is the dime you run into in the club and you talk to her all night and you get her number, but you never see her again. Nothing comes from it. Like that's fucking Lost. Like I don't need that shit in my life.
But the build up to it is exciting though.
Yeah, this is your loss, Scott. Yep. That's all right. That's okay.
Build up, it's real, and I'm okay with that. But I like Theo Rossi. You know, he's a dude that moves with silence and violence, and that shit rang true with me, and I'm okay with Theo Rossi.
Yeah, and you and real talk, Scott. You being unfair. You know, I don't call you guys.
It is. I admit that. I agree. I absolutely agree. That is unfair. I openly admit that, and that's a you know, this but is it is what it is.
That's why I fully acknowledge every time we talk about that woman, what she did to them people. I fully acknowledge I'm not rational on this subject.
Ain't nothing rational. So
Theo Rossi is your Evangeline Lilly. Nigga, I almost didn't go see the Ant-Man and the Wasp because of her.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, really?
That's absolutely ridiculous.
Wow. Ant-Man and the Wasp is actually worth a watch, though.
Yeah, it's just fun. It's fun. It's a fun franchise.
I'm giving you that perspective.
Yeah, there's literally no reason for him to feel that way. He knows it's unfounded, and that's fine.
No,
but
it's completely.
But in the beginning, the beginning of the season, I'll say Netflix and Marvel were incredibly smart with the amount of time that they use Rosario Dawson. Because in the emotional scenes where it's Rosario and Mike Coulter, he gets eaten alive. He gets absolutely eaten alive in those scenes.
Yeah, no, he's a, you know, it's funny. We just talked about how Theo Roxy's character was meant to be the number two. And this is one of the reasons why I think that this season works out better, because Mike Coulter is a gamer. He's not a lead man.
No, he's
but
not.
He plays off of people so fucking well.
That's true.
So it looks like they figured that shit out.
Yep.
So they surrounded him with all the, you know, ancillary characters and just had him play off of them. And it's fucking magic.
Yep. I agree.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with it. And, you know, one of the things I really enjoy about this season is, like, my unsung hero is Thomas Jones. He used to be...
He was really good.
You know?
Wait, what's the guy's name?
Comanche? Comanche?
Oh, Comanche.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
Thomas Jones. Yeah, yeah. That dude, he played 14 years in the NFL. He, really bright dude, man.
I can't believe he's that good of an actor.
He's like, really good.
The chemistry between him and Theo Rossi.
Yeah.
And like the multi-layered chemistry. Like, I agree. That's not no shit that like a fucking rookie ass actor can pull off. Like, that was like the layers that he put into that character. That was some real shit, dude. Like, that was some real shit.
And he, I mean, might he might have had the line of the season. So,
he definitely had the line of the season. That was some real shit. I was laid out.
Yeah,
that
I was clear. I slid clear off the couch off that shit.
I was done. That laid me out. Like,
clear off the couch. Dude,
yeah, no, the dude was fucking amazing. I want to see him in more stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good actor. I hope this is a launching pad for him. He's clearly a really intelligent cat that followed his craft. He's not just here to look good. Like, I really like this dude.
No. He's about it. He's about it. And people are talking about him. Yeah. People are talking about him. So I think he's going to get some more stuff. But I'm telling all y'all cats out there that keep stealing our idea, steal this one. Put that motherfucker in something.
I agree. So I'll tell you this. Alfre Woodard is chewing up the scenery on the back end of the season. I mean, like, on some Christopher Walken type shit, on some James Spader type shit. Like, she is in this motherfucker just chewing it up everywhere. She is hood. She is elegant. She is ambitious. She is emotionally open. She is conniving. She's motherly. And that's in a 30-second scene. Alfre Woodard is fantastic, man. If you have any questions about her acting ability, you're fucking up. She's that good.
No, don't you ever come about your mouth and say no stupid shit about Alfre Woodard. That woman can act. I will say this, though. On a personal note, Alfre Woodard looks a lot like my mother. Like, almost dead on my mother.
Oh, that's terrible.
Seeing her, seeing her do things I was, I'm not happy about. I'm still not happy about it. I'm a therapist. We're going to talk about some things. It wasn't right. So that shit kind of...
You got to talk about that. That's bad. That ain't good.
Why they did what they did, but it wasn't good for me. But hey, I'm glad everybody else got something out of it.
So outside of that, Scott, what else about this season? Did you enjoy some of the cameos, some of the people who came through?
I tell you what, the Iron Fist cameo was nice. I still am not big on Finn Jones playing the character. But I enjoyed the episode. It was nice that he kind of did pop in there, but it kind of creates the question, which I have when watching solo Avengers movies, that now that they've introduced everyone, it kind of makes it like, well, I mean, if one character's having a problem that they can't handle, why wouldn't they just, you know, team up and deal with it together? Because, you know, when you watch Iron Man 3 and Thor the Dark World, you know, these are epic events that affect, you know,
a large enough area that it's going to attract more attention.
Yeah, and they're huge, especially Iron Man 3.
Yeah, well, right, and Iron Man 3 is the dud of the MCU, but...
is Thor the Dark World.
Yeah, absolutely, and Thor the Dark World had a destruction of London, mm-hmm. and Thor is the only one answering the call. I mean, in Iron Man 3, Tony Stark disappears, and his house blows up, and he's the only one dealing with this shit.
His motherfuckers in Tennessee. So the reason
I'm this up is...
Like the fact that Captain Britain didn't show up in, fucking Thor the Dark World?
Well, no one, it was like S.H.I.E.L.D. wasn't involved. You spent, you spent from 08 to 2012 telling me that S.H.I.E.L.D. was monitoring all these characters, and then suddenly they're off on their own and nobody's coming to help. Like, I love the Winter Soldier, but it exists there a little bit too. Yep. You mean S.H.I.E.L.D. is destroying part of Washington, D.C.?
No, not part.
It's Tony Stark. Right. Where's Tony Stark at? Where's Hulk? I mean, like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
But in the Winter Soldier, Cap was handling it. So they just let Cap handle his business.
Correct, right. And the Winter Soldier is just like the rest of the movie holds up. So you can forgive it for that. But so back to Luke Cage, it was nice seeing Iron Fist there. And he was there to help him kind of take on the Bushmaster problem. But it also didn't make sense when he just leaves at the end. I mean, like, why wouldn't he just... kind of stick around.
He didn't even just leave at the end. He just never came back.
Correct. Like, and so it's...
He just wasn't there in the next scene.
It's one of those things. Like, look, I don't want to... I like Luke by himself handling the situation. However, it does create that back-of-the-mind question. Like, well, you have Jessica Jones and Iron Fist on speed dial. If you really need some help, I mean, I guess you could go for another superhero. Or when Luke Cage was having monetary problems... I mean, isn't the easiest way to solve that to get help from Danny Rand? Talk to Danny,
yeah. On top of all of that, and this is a pretty consistent question that comes up when we talk about the Marvel Netflix series. Do we think that Jessica and Luke will get together?
You know what? Hold on, Scott. Okay. First of all, Danny, fuck you. Yep. You did this shit on purpose.
Yeah, yes, I did. You're right.
You know I'm all in my feelings right now.
Yes,
and you're gonna bring this shit up. Like, all right, whatever. But they gotta get together. They gotta get together.
Why?
Because that's what I want to happen.
Okay.
I need that. I need that.
Yeah, I'm a big enough. I became a Luke Cage fan when he was a member of the Avengers, and he presented a realistic. To me, at least, as a reader, he was a more realistic take on an Avengers character working with, like, Captain America and Iron Man and Wolverine.
Yeah, because he's the only one that had a fucking family.
Correct. And so there it is. There's that. That's the answer. Luke Cage, I know and love, created a family with another character, and that character is Jessica Jones.
But this Luke Cage. But here's the thing. This Luke Cage is not that. And this Jessica Jones is so completely unlikable and despicable, she can be nobody's mother.
But Damon, that's the point.
I know.
That's why they're dirtying up Luke Cage. They're dirtying him up.
But they've also softened Jessica.
Exactly. They're moving them to the middle.
No. Like, Jessica, here. So, the other thing on the back end of all of this, and this is my own personal shit, the Luke Cage and the Harlem that we see is so black, it is damn near unacceptable for him to seat up a white super. Shit just can't happen.
No, you're right. You're right. You got a real point right there. You got a real point.
Like,
I don't see how he walks around Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
With her on his arm.
Because she moves to Harlem. Jessica and a baby live in Harlem.
Nah.
In this timeline, in this aesthetic, it doesn't make sense.
No, I don't see it. And now you got me in my feelings and I'm mad. Fuck you. But you're right.
No, you are right. I mean, with this, you're absolutely right. With this version of the character, it can't work because it's, and especially now, going back to the ending's a little darker for the character. And I really like that. It, like I said, taking a step back from what I knew, it presents all these potential stories.
You thought about it, huh?
Yeah.
Because we talked about, folks, we, you know, just so y'all know, we talked about this shit. Like, we talk about all this shit. And then sometimes we, like, stop ourselves from having the conversation so we can have them with y'all. But, like, we talked about this shit.
Yeah, Scott we had this whole conversation.
Happy. He wasn't happy.
And, you know, I think there's a little background. I won't spoil it for everybody, but I'll say this. There is a small Marvel series. It's a four book series.
No. Damn, you got no. You got to tell them. Because that was a great series. I read it.
I love it. Yeah, Luke Cage Noir. It's part of the Marvel Noir series. It's four books. It's really fucking good. It gives you an idea of not necessarily this Luke Cage, but it gives you an idea of a part of Luke Cage that you could kind of see, you know, possibly showing later on. I really enjoy that particular book. To this season, though, there's a lot of criticism on the Jamaican accents. And I tell people all the time, the Jamaican accents are not there to be fucking accurate. They're there to add flavor to the characters. White people don't know how to fucking listen to Jamaican accents and understand what they're saying. Regular black folks don't know what the fuck Jamaicans are saying. So don't sit up here and tell me. I've
commented constantly on in the fucking show.
We don't know what the fuck they're saying. Get out of here. And Chael Hedori-Cocker talked about the fact that Netflix was like, yeah, we're not going to give you subtitles for that shit. So guess what?
I actually appreciated that.
There you go. That point proven.
I don't know. It always kind of bothers me that if they have to do that, I don't know. I appreciated they didn't do it.
Yeah, and they gave you enough of the flavor of Jamaica without being so unintelligible that you had to have subtitles, right?
Correct. And it was nice because hell, one of the major characters of the season is Jamaican.
Right. I mean,
Bushmaster is there. He's there front to back when, dude, when
30% of the cast this season is Jamaican.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. And like let me tell y'all this, like, you know, y'all know this, you guys, Scott and Damon, but you know, the Rubers don't know this. Like, yo, man, like, I ran track heavy my whole
life. Oh, yeah, they're all Jamaican.
I ran into a lot of Jamaican cats. You really do not, you cannot understand these cats.
When they really get into it, they start speaking the patois, they start talking back home.
No, that patois is thick and official. So, like, if they had done this authentically, no one would have understood it. Yeah. So they had to water down a little bit. This is, you know, completely understandable.
Yeah. Yeah, like, words are in different places. Shit's just different. And I'm okay with that. And, like, I really need them to lay off this shit. Like, Chael Hedori-Cocker is one of, like, my personal favorite people, period. Because I feel like he is one of the few and first black nerds he got out. He's one of the hip hop black nerds that made it. He is a hip hop historian. He's an incredibly talented writer. He understands the place in history, and everything that this dude does has an earnestness and an honesty that comes from our generation that not many people have. So he's always going to get a pass from me. If you ever need an opportunity, he is. He absolutely is. I would tell you to follow this dude on Twitter and just take a look through some of his tweets. Like, I asked this motherfucker about the opening theme for Luke Cage, and he was straight up like, I didn't love the opening scene. I loved the closing scene, but I lost that battle in a fight with Netflix. Everybody else loved the opening scene. He didn't even like it. Like, that shit was real to me, man. I fuck with that dude.
Mm-hmm. So no, the dude's official. Like, this last season, look, the first season of Luke Cage, I liked on, you know, just the strength of Luke Cage. And again, you know, the soundtrack was on point. The score was okay. Like,
yep.
Oh, let's touch on that a little bit. That soundtrack, by the way, was awesome.
It was just the idea.
Soundtrack was dope.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. I didn't feel like there was any piece of music that was out of place.
Absolutely.
Oh, no. Not one. He killed it. But this second season right here, and what they did with the last couple of episodes, like I am excited for season three. I talked to Damon about this. I'm mad about season three because I'm like, okay, you know, the all of the second season for Luke Cage was good, but it wasn't great, you know. These last three episodes come up, and now
Last three episodes were great.
And now I gotta wait to see the next shit.
Yeah.
So like yeah.
There's an opportunity. You're thinking about the opportunity cost now. You're thinking about potential. The potential for what this could possibly be is better than anything it has been up until this point. Yeah.
Yes, you know exactly how I'm feeling. That's exactly it. And where they could go with this shit right here.
Yeah.
I mean, you talking about Devil with the Blue Dress.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Like this is some old. This is really.
Don't fix it. It's dope.
And it's funny that you mention that because this is now very much we're in a place of old black historical stories. We're telling black stories on a level that haven't been told. Maybe ever within popular culture, and the thing is, it's mixed within this Marvel archetype, so folks won't even recognize that they're telling these stories. That's what's so beautiful about it to me. And again, shout out to Chayo Hidori-Cocker. Shout out to that dude, man. He's doing incredible work. And you know, for regular, like Tony just. Coin of shit for regular rumors who don't understand this. These are stories that growing up we've always lived with. These are stories that we may have heard pieces of that our parents told us about, and then later when we hit our teens, we read the stories or we saw the movies. And you know, I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings, or any number of Toni Morrison stories. We're taking all of these different things and we're telling them through the vessel of Harlem. Through this vessel, Luke Cage, but we shined it up with Marvel. This shit is incredible, right. Man. Like,
no, this is. He could take this in a very Walter Mosley direction, and I am, and that's one of my favorite authors. I'm all on board. Like this could be really good. That's one of the reasons that I didn't realize it until you were talking. It's one of the reasons why the Joe fixed it. Run of the Hulk resonated with me deeply, you know what I mean? Because like honestly, it was a Black Hulk. I didn't get it then, but that's what it was. It was Black Hulk. Mm-hmm. So this right here is right up my alley, and the way that they took this story, they did it so smoothly. Like I didn't see this coming, and y'all know me. I'm always like, oh, they did this because they're gonna do that. Like I always see shit coming 100 yards away. They caught me looking on this one.
They got you good. And I remember how fucking surprised you were that you got caught on a Marvel Netflix. Because Marvel Netflix don't give us a ton of surprises. They just don't. And that's okay. Scott.
Yeah, we talked about this. I was like, man, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I was bothering you. Dude, you gotta see this. You gotta see this.
You gotta hurry up. Gotta finish. And we did. And I'm excited that we did.
You guys beat me. Usually I'm the one that caught that I burn through them, and I watch these Netflix shows with my wife, and she really loves them too. And we finally caught up in Jessica Jones, and you know, like I said, we both enjoyed it. And then we watched Luke Cage, and we were like, "Wow, this was fantastic!" I mean, it was a great front to back. And man, you guys kept bothering me about it too. Man, you got to finish it. And, you know, you caught me on a bad week on vacation, so I didn't get to finish it. But when we got back to it. We burned through the end of it quick because it just kept getting better and better and better.
Yeah, and absolutely.
It's super engaging. And like I said, it helps that I'm such a big fan of Luke Cage. I mean, I always reference one of my favorite scenes in all these Netflix shows is really small. I like when they first introduce him. It's one of the first episode when he meets Jessica Jones and he's sitting there in her apartment and he has that circle saw. And he lifts his shirt up and he puts the circle saw up on his stomach.
Yep.
And it just like burns the circle saw up. And I was like, man, see that right there. It's just something small, but that's a good touch for what this character is. It's just it's quick. It's easy. It's a nice little okay, I mean, I'm not, he's not to be fucked with because a circle saw won't cut him.
Yeah, they almost use his bulletproofness as a go-to gag throughout this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, because it always comes up, why are you shooting at him? Why are you shooting at him?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, come seriously. On.
And he literally says that. You go, come on, guys. Really?
Right. Right.
And they're like, we got to try. We got to show that we tried.
Yep.
So they shooting at him. No one is not going to do nothing. Yep. But they just got to look like they did something. Like, it's a running gag, and it's a good one. And they call upon it often. It was this season was something else, man. It really was really good. It was really good.
I got to say, like, my favorite moment of Mike Coulter inhabiting who Luke Cage is the 15-second ad when he's talking to DW.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I'm Luke Cage. You can't burn me. You can't blast me. You can't break me. Right? That is my favorite moment of Mike Coulter and Luke Cage. Come see me. You can't burn me. You can't break me. You can't blast me. Come like that right there. That was when I was like, okay, Mike Coulter truly gets who Luke Cage is now.
Yeah, that was great. That was great. I will say this, though. I think once they brought Iron Fist in, like, conversational wise, their chemistry is actually pretty good.
They've
like,
gotten better. I think they've gotten better.
Right. But every time you bring that softest baby doodoo motherfucker in a fight scene,
Finn Jones,
it falls the fuck apart.
Yeah, I know, like, you hate Finn Jones.
He is.
You have hate for Finn Jones the same way you have hate for Evangeline Lilly. It's pretty rough. Pretty rough.
Dude,
but he's not wrong. Look, though.
I grew up watching Kung Fu. No, I'm not wrong. I know I'm not wrong. I grew up watching Kung Fu movies. That was my dad's thing. He got off on Friday. He get paid. We pick up Little Caesar's Pizza because, you know, we was poor black folks. So we get two for the price of one. Yeah. We get Blockbuster, and we buy Kung Fu movies. So I've been watching this shit since before I can remember. So I done watched it all, and I know that this dude is terrible. And here's the thing. If you can take a goofy, awkward motherfucker like Keanu Reeves and train him for a long time
2 years.
And make him as he fucking is in The Matrix, and so good that he even plays in other shit. John Wick, Man of Tai Chi. Yo, if y'all ain't seen Man of Tai Chi, watch that shit. It's dope.
Oh, it's good. It is good. Yep. I support that.
So if you can do that with that awkward, goofy motherfucker, go back and watch Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Tell me that motherfucker's going to turn out to be a goddamn action hero. If you can do that with him, they could have did something with Vin Jones. Like, it's terrible. Yep. Like, his level of, like, physical acting is abysmal. It's unfucking acceptable.
It really sucks because it was a bad casting choice.
It was, because I feel like he has a Danny Rand shit now. After a full season of Iron Fist, 8 episodes of The Defenders, I feel like he is now inhabiting who Danny Rand is. I don't know if he's ever going to get who Iron Fist is.
Nope. And this is the problem that we, and honestly, this is a very common problem we have with superheroes. We've had several superheroes who have been Bruce Wayne, but not Batman. Have been Batman, but Bruce Wayne. Have been Spider-Man.
We just talked about Andrew Garfield. He was a great Spider-Man. He's a terrible Peter Parker.
Absolutely. And actually, I'm going to split y'all wigs right now. In my opinion, the best.
Don't say Tobey Maguire. Get the fuck out of here.
I'm going to do it.
Tobey Maguire is not better than the current fucking Spider-Man. Get the fuck out of here.
No, that's not what I'm saying. The current Spider-Man is the best Spider-Man.
Okay.
That's Peter Parker and the Spider-Man.
All right.
I'm going to say the best embodiment of Batman is Ben Affleck. That is Bruce Wayne, and that is Batman.
Boy. I got it. I'm going to interject here.
I'm with it.
When I think of Batman, I think of, and when I think of Bruce Wayne is different than when I think of Batman too. When I think of Batman, it's Michael Keaton. I grew up watching it. There's a lot of nostalgia there, but I think that costume is classic. It's very simple. It's intimidating.
It's practical.
It's gothic. It's practical. Yeah, it's practical, except for the head. He can't really move his head.
He can't move his head. Yeah, no. But they actually talked about that.
They
addressed that in the Christian Bale. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, and so that helps. But whenever I think of Batman, it's easy to go back to the nostalgia. And so I think of Michael Keaton's Batman because he played. I mean, we always talk of the Dark Knight trilogy, but Batman and Batman Returns are actually good movies, and they still hold up, in my opinion, anyway.
No, that's not even.
I don't think that's what you're saying. One of the things that you'll recognize about the later DC movies is they're really tuned into the idea of Bruce Wayne and Batman as two separate characters. So I understand what he's saying about Batfleck being the best Batman. I don't know if it's true. There's a part of me that's really frustrated with Ben Affleck for A, not finding a way to bring to light his vision of what Batman is. Like, that shit frustrates me. Because the older Dark Knight, Strikes Back Batman is an iconic Batman that could live on forever. I don't know if we'll ever see it, though. Especially now as the DC Universe is literally dissolving in front of our face. Outside of Wonder Woman, The Flash, and Aquaman, these motherfuckers have now said that they're about to do some fucking one-off movies that don't exist in any continuity. And if they work, they may pull it all together in a multiverse.
But they are bringing my boy to the fucking universe.
Who's that?
Y'all already know. Black Adam.
But
Shazam sucks.
Yeah, that Captain Marvel shit looks terrible.
Honestly, the character of Shazam sucks, and it's always sucked. I honestly believe that they might have just did that shit just so they could get Black Adam in.
Billy Batson, the way this shit looks, it looks terrible.
No, actually, the way it looks good. The dude they got playing Shazam, he looks like Shazam.
He's in a muscle suit.
Exactly, but he's a fucking cartoonish character.
I don't give a shit. Name one other superhero in any film currently who's in a muscle suit.
Yeah, you had to hit me with that currently because I couldn't hit you.
No. Since the Marvel Cinematic Universe, everybody has to go to the gym for a year and a half before shooting starts.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Look, I'm just saying, we have Chris Pine in Wonder Woman. This motherfucker hit the gym. And he's sexy now. Fucking Chris Evans.
Chris Pine while he was.
Look, Star-Lord came out chubby as shit in Parks and Rec. Now all of a sudden, this motherfucker at the beach with his shirt off. He's sexy on Guardians. You cannot be a superhero unless you got the muscles for the super tight fits and the 501 jeans, cuz it don't work. So I don't want to hear that shit. If these motherfuckers gave him a muscle suit, I'm done. I'ma see it, cuz I'm a glutton for punishment, apparently. But no, I'm not with it.
Nah, dude, Shazam is a different kind of film, dude. He's a different kind of hero. He ain't even real on the standards of, like, Superman and Batman.
Well, he has the same power as Superman. He and Superman go toe-to-toe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's one of the few characters who can stand toe-to-toe with Superman.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Shazam is not the main character. And he's not going to be the main character. This is a device for Black Adam. They did.
I think you are giving too much credit to Black Adam. He's an executive
producer on Shazam. I'm not. No, I see this shit.
Look, this he's is not this is not like Thanos. This is not like Thanos in Avengers, all right? You don't have a Shazam movie to introduce Black Adam. You don't have enough of a universe to do that yet.
You don't need a fucking universe. Black Adam is 1,000 fucking years older than Shazam. He's the prototype.
That's why you cast The Rock. But how do you have The Rock and Zachary Levi opposite each other? This shit is not the same. It doesn't work, B.
That's the point, my nigga. Black Adam is scarier. He's stronger. He's smarter than Shazam. The only reason why he don't mop the fucking floor with this motherfucker is because he done mellowed out over 1,000 years. He's been fucking chilling in the fucking Phantom Zone. Like, there is a DC comic where Shazam, where somebody fucks up. It's Injustice. Somebody fucks up. They kill ISIS. He flips the fuck out. It takes Superman and Shazam to bring him down.
Is this a new 52 comic that you're talking about?
Yeah, Injustice. Right. Injustice. It's not canonical, but it all is right. Fucking like...
Then, no, that's what I thought. All right, that's fine. But having all that said, I'm still not looking forward to that shit. But we didn't get so far off of the shit. I want to know, what do you give Luke Cage / season 2?
Go ahead, Scott. You first.
I'll probably go 9. I go 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. Nice. I can't wait till the till what or where they go from here. Stokes. And so do you think, so I have a couple questions for you guys before you give your score. Well, they're good afterthoughts, but yeah, I'd go 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Tall.
Strong going. Oh, greatest American villain. Stokes. Greatest American villain.
Stokes.
Here we go. 7. I give it a 7 out of 10.
You're a motherfucking black ass liar.
Wow. No. 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Here's the thing. It's fucking wonderful. Those last 3-2 episodes, fucking amazing. But the 10 before that shit?
No. First four are very good.
The first four are good. Same thing with last season, but it's the middle, so, like 4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to wade through 4 episodes.
Yeah, so, I understand, but I feel like where the possibility and
absolutely
the upside, the potential is enough to give it more than a 7. The potential with the ending in and of itself has to garner an 8, dog. I'm talking you up now, and I haven't even given mine.
All right, here we go. Now you're doing the shit I just got. All right.
Yep.
Let's see.
The potential alone can't leave you a 7.
Okay. All right.
This is potentially game-changing for all Netflix series hereafter.
Yes, it is.
All right. Fuck you. Apparently, we all doing this tonight. All right.
Yep.
7.5. I ain't going 8, but I can do 7.5.
9, bitch. All right. I'm done.
9?
Yeah, I
like 9, though?
I like the shit out of it. I enjoy the fuck out of it. Like,
you know what?
I am completely unabashed in my love of something that is A, so incredibly black, B, so drenched in hip-hop that all of the episodes have hip-hop song names. You have artists that show up, pop up, and they're part of the texture. Ghostface just shows up for no motherfucking reason. And he's just there.
Ghostface.
There's just so Cameron much. Run. There's just so much about this shit. About I mean, yeah, look. None. There's so much about this shit that is so hip-hop. That in and of itself is always going to garner a higher role for me. And I'm okay with that. You can pick it apart and say whatever the fuck you want. My opinion, I think this shit's a 9. So, yeah, that's where we at.
And then when you think about the issues that it brings up in regards to like black masculinity and like
toxic masculinity.
Like just on just yeah, toxic masculinity and just anger. I mean, and I was in a bad place when I was watching this shit with a bad situation.
Yep.
And the shit resonated with me. You know what? Fuck you, nigga. It's an 8.
There you go. There we go. Now we talking. Now we talking. Yep. Now we motherfucking talking. I knew it was going to get there. Yeah.
Nah, you got me. You got me. It's an 8.
I just had to get you thinking. I just had to get you thinking. Now I'm good. So the next piece, we're going to do quick hits, real fast quick hits. Scott, anything you've watched outside of what we talked?
You know, no, although the on my radar currently, and when I say radar, it's going to happen here in the next, hopefully within the next week. I do want to catch the, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before. I do want to catch the, since I'm a Chainsaw Massacre fan, they did a prequel last year, the year before. I don't remember. I think it was last year, called Leatherface.
Yep.
It's like an origin story for Leatherface. I'm going to catch that and give a review. My hopes, of course, for it aren't super high. But,
can't be.
I'm a fan of the character.
Yeah, Toby Hooper's gone, though. So.
Yeah, oh, I know. I mean, my expectations aren't very high, but.
Wait a minute, Scott. Didn't Rob Zombie direct that that recent remake that you're talking about?
No.
No, you're thinking Halloween.
You're thinking Halloween. He didn't do Leatherface.
No. Yeah. No.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm shooting that shit.
The one with Daddario? He didn't do that.
No, yeah, he didn't do that one. If he did that one, it at least might be better.
Well, I mean, it has Trey Songz and Daddario in a love scene. So.
Boy, that movie really is terrible. But anyway. My hopes are high for that one. Other than that, horror-wise, that's on my radar. And, gosh, there was something else, too. I can't think of it. Come back to me, and I'll see if I can think of it. Okay. I haven't watched anything else. I saw Ant-Man and Wasp. That was pretty good. I'd recommend that. I mean, if you saw the first one, if you've seen all the other MCU movies, stick around in the credits. That those scenes are pretty important. Well, the first scene's pretty important, and it's really good too. So,
I'm working my way towards it.
You gotta watch it, man, because I suspect it's gonna be quite important for the next Avengers movie.
I'm trying. I gotta get over my Kate shit. I can't even call her Evangeline Lilly. She's Kate. Like I'm trying. I'm gonna do it.
Tone, should I go ahead and get into it? Yeah. We said we're gonna talk about this, so jump into it.
Oh yeah, the shit I've been watching. Okay, but now I'm like a couple of into my Browns, so I gotta be careful because, you know, we don't want to get too problematic on the Bay shit. So, I've been watching The Center, which is a great Netflix. You know, it's one of my little Netflix gems, and it is indeed a gem. It stars an imperfect female protagonist.
To be completely honest, this was a USA limited series run. And it aired on USA. It starred Jessica Biel. And go ahead, continue.
All right, Damon, clean me up. Appreciate that. Thank you, Dave. So. Jessica Biel is the protagonist. She just flips the fuck out and kills somebody, and we don't know why. And then the whole series is the exploration of the why, the understanding. It's got Bill Pullman in it, which, honestly, I don't think I've ever seen Bill Pullman in a bad movie. Or, excuse me, I shouldn't say I've never seen him in a bad movie. I've never seen him play a bad role. Like, Bill Pullman can act. He's fucking great in it. And again, it's just an imperfect female protagonist. Good story. I forgot the title of that fucking movie. Day, I know you know what I'm talking about. Ben Affleck, that other girl. Same thing, imperfect female protagonist. Come on. I know you got me. Come on.
Wow, what are you talking about right now? You talking Gone Girl? Like, what's happening right now?
Yeah, Gone Girl.
Okay, there we go.
Right. See, what did I say? Yep. I know you got me.
Yeah, exactly. Rosamund Pike. Yep, I got you.
Yes, yes. So, you know, think of female protagonists like this. Imperfect. Fucked up. You know, doing her own little shit. Yeah, The Sinner is fucking great. I've been watching it. I've really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed the character of Jessica Biel. I've really enjoyed, you know, the layers that they've peeled back from her. You know, it's just good fucking TV watching, y'all. So, like, I suggest you fucking watch it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I found it incredibly. So, this is probably the most complete work that Jessica Biel has done. And
oh, absolutely.
And I found it quite refreshing, man.
Yes, absolutely. You know, typically Jessica Biel plays an archetype. She plays an archetype, you know? She plays a lot of light fare. She plays a lot of, you know, again, archetype. But, you know, now that she got that Justin Timberlake money, she's not worried about making a paycheck no more. So she's doing some real shit. This is some real shit. This is a great fucking character.
I agree. I genuinely enjoy what we've done here. This is not rich. This is not. It's more easily accessible than most places, and I think because of that, what some of the things that you watch here resonate with you. It's shocking. It makes you feel a little uncomfortable at times, and I like that aspect of it. It's a good show. The ending brings it home. Tone hasn't finished yet, but the ending is going to bring home for you. And I would.
What is this on Netflix?
Yeah, it's called The Sinner. Yeah.
Okay. The Sinner.
Yep.
It's good. For real, Scott, you gotta watch it. You gotta watch it.
It's good. It's not long. It's a quick watch.
Okay.
So I enjoy it. Yeah.
Did you guys catch the when it was on, when it premiered? Now, I mean, it's still on there, but The Ozarks. Did you guys watch that?
I haven't watched Ozark yet. That's the next thing.
I haven't watched it yet. It looks it's on my list too. It's on my list too because I love Jason Bateman.
It's good. It's a little. It's Breaking Bad-ish, but it's Breaking Bad-ish. I'm not comparing it to Breaking Bad. It's just, well. It's Breaking Bad.
Jason Bateman's got that in him. To be honest, it was way better than I thought it would be.
It was better than I thought it would be. It was kind of like I saw the trailer, you know, like zipping through Netflix, and my wife and I caught the trailer, and we're like, "Oh, let's check this out." And we kept watching it, and it holds up way better than, you know. I mean, it's pretty good. And it's entertaining, and it's engrossing, and I think they're doing a season two as well, so.
All right.
I recommend that.
It's already on my list, so I'm definitely.
Center, you said? That's what you were just talking about.
The Sinner.
No, Sinner, like sin. The Sinner.
Oh, Sinner. The Sinner. Okay, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. That's good. I need a new show. That's going to be it.
There we go. There we go.
So I've been on this true crime kick. Real tough recently. I've been listening to a really popular podcast called Sword and Scale. Really, really good. I finished The Atlanta Monster by Payne Lindsay and then Up and Vanished, which was his first podcast. And I've just been trying to find other things that are similar, and I've landed on Sword and Scale. And the folks over there do really, really good work. They put a lot of effort into their podcast, like way more effort into their podcast than we do. I like them a lot. So if you're looking for some true crime shit, some real life room shit, go ahead and, you know, watch that or listen to it. It's on Stitcher. It's on everything you can find. Just go ahead and, you know, check it out. But because of that, I watched Evil Genius on Netflix. And
I told you.
That shit is really fucking.
Wait, hold on. This is what I was just thinking of. Is Evil Genius the one with the bomb on the neck?
Yep.
Or the, like, yep. Yes. Yep. Okay. I did. Yep. I watched that in a day.
Yep.
That is incredible.
Yep.
That shit resonated with me, dude.
Like if you like King of Murderer, watch that Evil Genius.
Yep.
That was almost your boy. Let me tell you.
Yeah, Evil Genius is a tough one, man.
No, it's great. It's some real life room shit.
Yep.
But it's also just entertaining as fuck.
Like, oh really good. My gosh. Super entertaining.
Really good.
Yep.
So many twists and fucking turns and shit. And like, this is real life shit, you know? Like, just great.
Should happen.
Just great.
So many different layers and aspects. It's never just a straight up
one thing.
But the thing that you do watch for me, you know, you're definitely left kind of blown throughout the entire situation. Like, how does this happen? And you start talking to people, you realize it can happen.
Oh no! I know somebody that's like homegirl. Like, it's real. It's real out here. That's some real shit. Like, I know that person.
Yep.
Fucking creepy. It
really is, man. So that's what I've been watching. I've been checking out a whole bunch of other things. And I tell you, I really enjoy what Netflix is offering in terms of their true crime, in terms of their documentaries. There's something called The Stare, which I believe also has not necessarily related, but almost a companion piece on a podcast called Criminal, where they talk about a case like this. That's super interesting. And I would definitely say check that out too. But there's two seasons of that. They've gotten really far into it at this point. And, you know, sometimes...
Are you talking criminals far into it? Is that what you're saying?
No. The show, The Stairs, they're in their second season of this whole investigation now. Criminal talks about this fucking case for like 23 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But...
No, I've been hearing a lot about The Stairs lately. I've been hearing a lot about that.
Yeah, and this shit is like... You know, there are two seasons in, so it's a lot in it. But I've been just listening to a lot of that stuff, and it's really interesting. So,
You know, something I want to mention on, like, you know, a lighter fare. You know, man, actually, two things I want to mention on a lighter fare. One is Disgraceland. Have you heard about this?
Yes, about the stories of music folks who end up in death.
Yeah. Yes. Really good shit. I don't always agree with this dude, Ben. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes I feel like he's coming at these stories from a point of view that ain't right. But it is entertaining. You know what I mean? His voice is a little annoying, but, like, entertaining stories. The other one I want to talk about is the 20% True podcast. Really weird, really obscure. Basically, just think like fairy tales told in a, you know, realistic, down-to-earth manner. But like really like cute and lighthearted and like good.
20%
true. Yeah, 20% true.
All right. Works for me. Huh. So, yeah, if that's it, man, we can get up out of here. Y'all good?
All right. Yeah.
Tom, where can they find you?
Well, people know. They can find me on Twitter. Fake William Cat. I'm the greatest American hero.
Greatest
American villain. That's right, baby. You can catch me on Facebook. We got the fan page. Get out the room. I'm on there a lot. So again, I said this last time, we're accessible. So, you know, come holler at us. Again, we had a fan suggest something to us and we made a fucking podcast out of it. And that was actually a fucking great podcast. Yeah. And then we had our homegirl Joy suggest some other shit to us that we got a lot of fun out of, but it was a terrible fucking movie. Love you, Joy, but nah.
Yep.
But yeah, we're accessible. Come holler at us.
All right. Well, Scott, where can the people not find you?
At Phenom Pyrus. I'm not there all the time.
Ever. So it's there. I'll continue to put it in the show notes, and
That's good.
I'll be there. Yeah, great.
Eventually, you guys will get to me on that.
No, you won't. It's fine. And catch me at DAE021 at Get Out the Room. And for Scott and for Tom, man, we appreciate you guys. You can find Get Out the Room anywhere good podcasts are found. Podomatic, iTunes, Listenopoly, Wicked Radio Network. Anywhere you listen to your stuff, we'll be there. And we out, man. We'll holler at y'all.
Peace.